The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth.
Why is a horrific tragedy the price we have to pay? Hurricane Irma slammed into the Florida Keys Sunday morning, then it made its way west up the coast of Florida, weakening for a while to a Category 2, but by the time it hit Tampa overnight, it felt anything but a Category 2. Irma's eye didn't strike Miami directly, but the city, along with most of southern and west coast of Florida, were hit with storm surges and widespread flooding, and it's not over yet. We still don't know the overall damage, but it's safe to say it's already one of the worst storms in Florida's history, followed by one of the worst storms in American history. Half of the state of Florida is out of power today. The combination 1-2 punch of Harvey and Irma come just as we are reminded today of the 16th anniversary of one of the most tragic days in American history, certainly the most tragic day of my lifetime. The human toll of these hurricanes, thank God, does not come anywhere close in America to the horror of September 11th, 2001. But the enormous loss of property and livelihood provides us an opportunity to wrap our arms around American neighbors who need our help. Do you remember how we all felt? It's September 11th. Do you remember how we all felt that night? I remember that night after working late. We all went to an Outback steakhouse and we shook our heads and couldn't believe what our day was like. And we talked about how America was about to change. But we listened to each other. We helped one another. We were on the same team for a while. You could feel it in the air. I think we felt that same thing with Hurricane Harvey. We have the opportunity to rally again, to get back on the same page about something other than ourselves. After Katrina, the city of Houston opened their arms to the people of New Orleans. And now New Orleans wants to return the favor. The city captured the spirit in a heartfelt message to Houston. I'll share later. It's amazing. The way of life you love will carry on, they wrote. You taught us that. Your courage and your care continues to inspire our whole city. We couldn't be more proud to call you our neighbors, our friends, and our family. Texas forever. We're with you. The attitude of service is what made America great. Why do we keep forgetting that? America is great because America is good, and we have seen it on display. My question is, why does it always seem to take a horrific tragedy? Why is that always the price we have to pay to get there? During World War II, FDR called America the arsenal of democracy. Today, what we're seeing in Houston, what we're going to see in Florida, is America as the arsenal of generosity. You want to make America great again? Let's just continue to be known for that.
Monday, September 11th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hanging up. Mama. Negative.
Hi, is the captain. I would like to order the remaining CTF. We have bomb aboard and are going to back to the airport. And we have our demand. So please remain quiet.
Say again. Selector 956, did you understand that transmission?
Yeah, that transmission, he said, was unreasonable. It sounded like someone said they have a bomb on board.
Sir, did you hear the transmission? Was the airplane that said he had a bomb on board?
The affirmative, he said there was a bomb on board. That's what we thought. We just, we didn't get it clear.
That aircraft he can't get a hold of, has he turned to the east now?
He's just turned to the east also.
Okay, 956, we had a visual out of his standby.
Do you have a visual on him now?
We did, but we lost him at the turn.
If you can make a turn back to a 220 heading, let me know if you can see him.
They were making a turn at 956.
Okay, American 10-6 and Executive 956, we just lost the target on that aircraft.
Man, Z100 852. Something weird is going on.
Yeah.
The World Trade Center is on fire.
Oh, my Seriously, goodness. The top of the building. We're trying to get information.
Top level of one of the...
...news to unfold from New York City.
A plane crashed. Just...
My sister's in that building.
Okay.
And I hope she's okay, and I gotta run to New York.
Oh, my God! Complete pandemonium!
First of all, calm down. We're...
There's raining papers and ashes and...
Second plane has now flown in.
Wait, explosion at the Pentagon?
A third location
is on alert.
And outside of Washington,
I don't have words to describe what I'm witnessing right now.
Effective immediately until further notice, flight operations in the National Airspace System by United States civil aircraft and foreign civil and military aircraft are prohibited.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward. And freedom will be defended.
Oh my God!
It just landed on my head.
One of the World Trade Towers has collapsed and fallen.
Get off the whole freaking roof!
Get down!
What's happening?
We got your code!
I've never seen anything like this.
We've got five patients. They need to be...
We got an ambulance full of cops and pedestrians.
The building just collapsed.
We don't have much more.
We got another tower that just came down.
Get the feet out!
Get all the cops away from the building.
You got a female officer down. Female officer, where are you now, kid?
Where are you, Kate? Where are you?
We're not gonna be stopped. We're not gonna be deterred. We're not gonna stay at home. We're not gonna be frightened. We're gonna live our lives as Americans.
We're all brothers. We all gotta stick together.
It is Tuesday, September 11th, 2001. This is Glenn Beck. Dateline, New York. In one of the most audacious attacks ever, terrorists hijacked two airliners, crashed them into the World Trade Center. In a coordinated series of blows today that brought down the twin 110-story towers. Thousands may be dead. 58,000 people work at the World Trade Center.
Sean, it's me. I just wanted to let you know I love you, and I'm stuck in this building. A plane hit the building or a bomb went off. I don't know, but there's lots of smoke, and we just wanted you to know that I love you always.
One plane, United Flight 93, crashed north of Somerset County Airport, a small airport 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. United said that flight, Boeing 757, left Newark at 8:01, headed for San Francisco with 38 passengers.
Just know that we'll prevail.
We will not turn.
It is as old as the scriptures.
We will not falter.
And it is as clear.
And we will not fail.
As the American Constitution.
That is the news of this day. September 11th, 2001. How many promises did we make on that day? How many promises have we kept and how many have we broken to ourselves, to our country, and to our families, to one another? You know, the reason why you have anniversaries, one to commemorate, to memorialize, and another to celebrate. We certainly don't celebrate 9/11. But shouldn't we take the opportunity to memorialize our commitment to one another and to what's true? How many things did you think you knew were true? 9/11, 2001. How many of those still remain? What did you promise yourself that you would be? What did you promise yourself you would do? There are so many broken promises littered between us and then. You remember on 9/11, we said we wanted to know who was here and who had overstayed their visa. That was the biggest thing. We have to know who's here and who has overstayed their visa, because people had come in and learned how to fly planes while on visas that they had overstayed. So we were going to fix that. That was one of the easy ones. That was simple. We can fix that. Last year, 629,000 foreign nationals came into our country and overstayed their visa. Last year alone, 629,000 just disappeared. Those are the people coming here legally. We don't even talk about things as security threats anymore. Our border isn't a security threat. It's, well, maybe for drunk driving. Maybe once in a while. MS-13. The worst of the worst. They weren't here in 2001 in all of our cities. Now they have a drug and violence network throughout all major cities. There's this story yesterday, an alleged kidnapper of the Los Zetas Mexican cartel, arrested in Chicago, faces a 24 kidnapping charges and linked to a horrifying massacre in Mexico.
He was arrested in the sanctuary city of Chicago. He is linked to a massacre of 300 people who were kidnapped, killed, cut into pieces, and incinerated in ovens. He was living in Chicago. You know, this year, I want to spend more time looking at 9/11 on the broken promises, but not even the broken promises like that. Not on, you know, political promises that are broken. I mean, gosh, what a graveyard that is. Today, I challenge you to think of the broken promises that you made, that you broke, that I made, that I broke. The things that we have to do to remember, like we did on September 11th, that the only thing that really matters is one another. For that fraction of a second in our lives, we remembered that nothing else mattered. We could lose everything, but as long as we had each other, as long as we had a chance to be free, we could rebuild and reconfigure anything. We've lost that. Today, I challenge you to find it once again today.
Coming up, we have ways for you to help out with the hurricane, with Mercury One, and all the efforts going on with Irma, and still Harvey. We can't forget that as well.
Jeez,
it's been quite a last couple of weeks.
It's been an amazing opportunity to change our attitude and refocus and to recenter ourselves.
It's a lot more positive than I was looking at it.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
A major credit reporting bureau announced a breach that could affect 143 million Americans. No big deal. That's just half of us. So far, Equifax determined that the credit card numbers for about 200,000 consumers and personal data, including Social Security numbers for 180,000 consumers, were accessed, taken. What do we do now? That was Equifax. Aren't they the ones that are supposed to be monitoring credit? Yeah, well, apparently they didn't have LifeLock. You are 11 times more likely to become a victim of identity fraud if you are notified of a breach. 11 times more likely to become a victim if you're notified of a breach. Good thing there is LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, threats that you are going to miss through just credit monitoring systems like, oh, I don't know, Equifax. Somebody is capable of stealing your 401k. But here's the thing. If there is a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist with LifeLock is going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, as we are seeing in this story. But LifeLock can help you see more of the threats to your identity. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. That's Beck for 10% off your LifeLock membership. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% right now.
Glenn Beck.
Hey, we just want to offer our condolences to the Bowling family. Eric Bowling had a tragedy happen in his family. Couldn't have come at a worse time. He finds out that Fox has let him go, and then later that evening, his son passes away at school. We don't know the details yet. I don't know if it's any of our business anyway. But our thoughts and prayers are with the Bowling family. And for anybody who, you know, wants to go online and drag him through the mud, can we see the human toll? Can we continue to see the human toll? And perhaps focus on that a little bit. Try to remember that we're all in this together, and no one should suffer that loss of a child.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
There is an open letter in the Houston Chronicle today that I wanted to share, and I warn you, I read this morning when I first got up, and I thought, tears welled up. This is such a great letter from the city of New Orleans to the city of Houston. Now, you have to remember, when Katrina hit, Houston took the brunt of it. Houston picked up so much and helped so many people that were coming in and just fleeing from New Orleans. So here's what the open letter to the city of Houston says in the paper. To our friends in Texas, 12 years ago, you took in hundreds of thousands of us. You opened your homes, your closets, your kitchens. You found schools for our kids and jobs to tide us over. Some of us are still there. And when the rest of the world told us not to rebuild, you told us not to listen. Keep our city and our traditions alive. Now, no two storms are the same. Comparing rising waters is a waste of energy when you need it most. But know this, in our darkest hour, we found peace and a scorching bright light of hope with our friends from Texas. And we hope you'll find the same in us. Our doors are open. Our clothes come in every size. There's hot food on the stove, and our cabinets are well stocked. We promise to always share all that we have. Soon, home will feel like home again, even if it seems like it's a lifetime away. We'll be battling for football recruits under Friday night lights. You'll tell us to stop trying to barbecue, and we'll tell you to lay off your crawfish boil and come have a real thing. But for as long as you need, we are here to help. The way of life that you love the most will carry on. You taught us that. Your courage and care continues to inspire our whole city. We couldn't be more proud to call you our neighbors, our friends, and our family. Texas forever. We're with you. New Orleans. So there's several things that you need to know. It is 9/11, and we have some crazy things to go over with you. There is another hurricane on the way. This one, Hurricane Jose. We are already, did you know this? We're already, this is the first time the United States, continental U.S., has ever been hit by two hurricanes in the same year. Yeah, look it up.
The first time? No, that's not true.
First time in the same year that two category, what, three or fours have hit the continental United States in the same year.
Okay.
It's the worst this has ever been. And now we have a third one coming.
It's unbelievable.
I mean,
it really is. Are we sure about Jose? Is it going to?
No, it's kind of just meandering. It's just kind of hanging out like, meh, I haven't decided.
Interesting piece of today's history. Which is, you know, it's 9/11, 2001. We obviously all remember that for what happened. At that time, Hurricane Aaron was 300 miles off the coast of New York. If it had shifted a few hundred miles, they would have closed down all the airports that day. They would have had to cancel all the flights.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how many times do hurricanes hit that area? Very rarely, obviously. So the odds were not high, and certainly I think Muhammad Atta would have been like, hey, you know what, I'm going to rebook that one. I think he probably would have still tried to do what he did. along with the other terrorists. But still, it's a, kind of an amazing thing to look back at. That the we would not have thought of this day the same way. It would have been some other day, probably. But who knows? I mean, when one thing, when plans like that get shifted, who knows? Maybe there's a chance we stop them. Who knows? But no, it. So we're not getting hit by hurricanes when we probably want to, and then we are getting hit by them when we don't want to.
So here is here are people. I would just like to throw this in as we have a little potpourri of crap that we have to shovel out. People that I think perhaps should meet Darwin. Usually, what I mean. Did anybody else notice that there was an exceptional number of stupid people this weekend? The people who were surfing, Chris Cuomo, I would just want to throw him in. Just the stupid people that were out there for no reason whatsoever. Tim Scott comes out, the governor of Florida, and he comes out and he's giving one of the, I don't think I've ever heard a governor more clear. Yeah, you got to get out. The time to leave is right now. Right now is the time to leave. And now means now. So if you're thinking about doing it later, you should do it right now. I mean, he literally, that was the speech. Get out right now. Leave. No help is coming your way. So there's always an idiot or two. There was a Miami man who was caught by NBC News. Who said he was going to tie himself to a post when Irma hits. So this guy is standing there. He has no shirt on. And the NBC anchor says, excuse me, sir, why are you out here? Well, I'm testing this out. I'm actually doing a stunt. And I know it sounds crazy, but there's meaning behind it. I'm tying myself to a post down on Meridian for the duration of the hurricane. It's all planned out with safety precautions and everything. What would those safety precautions be that are all planned out? Is 10 feet of water was supposed to come your way? I don't
gills
is that what it was? CBS, a kid was interviewed on the street. He said he and his family aren't leaving because, quote, we are savages.
Okay, it's a good quality reason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's another guy that donned a snorkeling mask and said, I'm going to ride Irma out in a storefront on Duval Street.
Oh,
okay. All right. I don't know about you, but these are the people that should meet Darwin. These are the people whose entire monkey tail has not fallen off yet. I'm just saying, this is a quote, you'll either read about me in the obituaries or I'll be the first one looting Publix.
What? It's tough because these moments are kind of funny in retrospect, but these people are going to go and have access to the same life-saving services.
That was the point. I think that was the point of Governor Scott's message that I heard on Saturday. I think it was Saturday. Leave now. Now is the time to leave. He was basically saying, hey, monkey tail people, we ain't coming back for you. Yeah, there's a special place for you. It's in Darwin land. The survival of the fittest, and you're just not smart enough. I mean, if you're trapped and you can't get out, that I'm willing to fly, we're willing to do anything we can to get you. But you choose to stay? No.
Well, you choose to stay and tie yourself to a post is different than you choose to stay. I mean, my mom lives in Georgia, and they for a while they thought, they were going to get hit.
Yeah.
So a lot of people evacuated to the west. And of course, then the hurricane also evacuated to the west, sadly. So some people went right into it. And, there's a lot of things that can happen in these storms. Until you know exactly how they're going to be tracked, it's hard to really blame people. Because a lot of times you think, maybe I should stay and ride this thing out. Pat did it in Hurricane Rita.
I know.
And we yelled at him on the air about it. And it wound up being the much better decision. It's tough. But It's another thing to tie yourself to a post. That's not tough. It's usually pretty easy to avoid that.
So hang on just a second. So you're right. There are different levels. And so if you are the one who says, no, you know what? I'm going to ride this out. I feel bad when I see a picture of you on your roof. I feel bad. I'm like, we should do something. I mean, is there anybody standing around with their hands in their pockets that maybe could go help that person? I see you and you're the guy who is tied to the post. No, I just continue to watch. I think I continue to watch. Go, look, the water's rising higher. Yeah, I bet he doesn't have an actual safety feature that he was bragging about just a little while ago.
Probably not. Do you want to hear this guy?
Yeah, do you have him?
Yeah, we have audio of him, apparently.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's listen.
Excuse me, sir, why are you out here on your...
I'm testing this out. I'm actually doing a stunt. It sounds crazy, but there's a meaning behind it. I'm tying myself to a post down on Meridian for the duration of the hurricane. It's all planned out with safety precautions and everything.
Well, be safe out there. Be safe, all right? Appreciate the guys.
He's just like, okay, all right, okay, shut him up. He's crazy.
Where is the follow-up question? What is happening in journalism?
I think what he was saying was, that guy's crazy. The guy's crazy.
Yeah, we actually would rather have you out there. So yeah, go, just, get out there. Just, yeah. What are you? We got safety precautions. You're tying yourself to a post? Do you have safety precautions? Unless the post is indoors, you don't have safety precautions.
You don't get that. You do a follow-up question with that guy, you don't think I'm in danger. As an anchor, I'm now in danger talking to this guy.
I've got to know what he planned to protect himself in that situation. I must know.
So having your car repaired is always so cheap. Always so cheap. Sooner or later, everybody's car starts to break down, and I would like to recommend that you get extended coverage from Car Shield. A new engine or transmission could cost you over $5,000. Even a simple repair to a sensor can cost over $1,000. So skip the hassle. Car Shield makes the whole process really easy. You select your favorite mechanic, or you can just go to the dealership. Doesn't matter, because you're not paying them. There's no checks in the mail stuff or waiting for the reimbursement. CarShield gets the mechanic paid directly, so you don't have to worry about it. CarShield's administrators even give you the VIP treatment, providing 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is in the shop, so you're not left stranded and in the cold in case your car breaks down. If your car is 3 to 12 years old, it doesn't mean that you have to pay the high repair bills. Car Shield administrators have paid out close to $2 billion in claims, and they're ready to help you. Save yourself thousands in potential car repairs. Get covered in the ultimate extended vehicle service protection before it's too late. Call 1-800-CAR-6100. 800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code Beck or visit carshield.com. Use the promo code Beck, and you're going to save an additional 10%. That's carshield.com. Promo code Beck. Deductibles may apply.
Glenn Beck.
Is it tomorrow that we have Hillary Clinton's the video book? Because, you know, a lot of people don't know if she even has a video book, but we have...
Or a book.
Yeah, or a book, but mm-hmm. We have the outtakes of the video book we'll be sharing with you later this week. Here is Hillary this weekend talking about the concession speech that she never delivered. Listen to this.
Kind of went into the bedroom, laid down on the bed, just thought, okay, I just have to wait this out. But then midnight, I decided, well... looks like it's not going to work.
After midnight, she called Donald Trump, the president-elect. And then she called the White House.
You called the president? I did. I felt like I had let everybody down.
Morning came, and the nation was waiting to hear from her.
I had not drafted a concession speech. I'd been working on a victory speech.
That is so fake.
It's just so fake. I was thinking about killing myself because I haven't. But so fake. There's no genuineness about her at all at any time.
It's incredible. You should wait till you hear the audiobook of her reading this. It's incredible. In a second, without any knowing any of the content, why she lost. Because she's just terrible.
Horrible.
In every way, she's not a human being, it seems like. She somehow cannot pull off the normal human connection.
She's the last to get this message, but listen to this clip.
Is your political career over?
Yes. As an active politician, it's over.
You will never be a candidate for office.
I am done with being a candidate, but I am not done with politics because I literally believe that our country's future is at stake.
Yeah. I'm done being a candidate. Like, she had another choice. Like, she's like, well, I don't know. The people are clamoring. They are. They're chanting. Listen. Okay, you can't hear them, but I believe they are chanting Hillary 2020. You have no other choice. Nobody wants you.
I will say this is a good time for me to bring up that I am done with my Olympic pole vaulter career.
Really?
I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that.
Yeah.
Because, the extra 100 pounds and no strength and
I have not given up my Olympic swimming bid.
Really?
I'm in the control group. So they have all the Olympic swimmers, and then they'll have the control group, which is just people like me, in board shorts,
right?
Just swimming alongside. So, darn it, Hillary's not going to run. What are you going to do, Democrats? What are you going to do?
I can tell you what they're going to do. We heard this weekend from, I believe it was the daughter. Was it the daughter of Joe Biden?
Oh, my gosh.
Saying, hey, you know what?
He's and the Republicans are the ones that are in trouble?
I know.
Really? Really? I mean, media, what are you fighting for? What are you like, we got to get our guy in. Whom? Who is that? Who would it be? Who do you have?
Dick Gephardt is who they have, and they're going to bring him back. It's going to happen.
No, I don't think.
No, I think Gephardt Biden is a strong ticket. Biden needs another 8 years as VP. Then he can run in 2028 for the big job. This is a good formula.
Just crazy.
This is going to work out really well.
If you didn't see the Bannon interview on 60 Minutes.
Wow.
Conservatives, you need to hear it. We're going to play something for you that I want an explanation. I just want an explanation because this is everything the giant progressives have wanted for decades. And he's the champion. That's coming up.
Glenn. Love, courage, truth.
16 years ago today, the world changed forever. What's amazing to me is there's such a huge part of the population that will never know America the way I did, the way perhaps you did. High school graduates in 2001 saw the world through a much different lens than the kids that will be graduating today. In 2001, a gallon of gas cost $1.46, which at the time was completely outrageous. For the most part, the world was peaceful. The United States wasn't at war. The Gulf War was a decade in the rearview mirror, and America felt invincible. Islamic terrorism wasn't something we had to worry about, something our kids had to worry about. It was maybe something that grown-ups read about in the newspaper, but it was the third story on the 10 o'clock news. Nobody had ever heard of Osama bin Laden. Then 9/11 happened. The high school graduates today have never known an America not at war.
peacetime is a distant era that they've read about in their history books. And yet, wartime seems normal. Is war a high price to pay? Terror attacks are no longer the third story on the 10 o'clock news. They're weekly, sometimes daily discussions. For those who are graduating this year, terrorism is something that they've had to consider almost with everything that they do, attending a 4th of July fireworks display, going to a concert, planning a trip to Europe, going on the airplane. What does it feel like to go to a New Year's Eve celebration and not have to think in the back of your mind, what do we do if there's a terror attack? It's almost been so long now that I've forgotten what that is like. What did it feel like to graduate high school to see the world as completely accessible, where you could plan a trip to Egypt and see the pyramids, go to France, go to Spain, not a worry? Would any parent today be comfortable sending our kids to any of those places? Just, hey, yeah, go have a good time. Call us when you get there. This is the world that is normal today. A world in perpetual war and threat of terror attacks doesn't mean anything. It's just the way it is. We are still discovering how much of our country and how much of the world changed on September 11th, 2001. One thing is for sure, the United States is not the same as it was on December 10th, 2001. But what we become, that's up to us. And I don't even mean our government or our politicians or anybody else. It's up to us. Our story is yet to be written. Our future is a blank page. And we are the only author.
Monday, September 11th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Where does America go from here? We are at a crossroads, and we have more things that are coming our way, economic troubles. We have more decisions to make, and there's a lot of things that the media is just not paying attention to. Last night on 60 Minutes, Steve Bannon, they did an interview with Steve Bannon, and you're going to hear a lot of talk about it. Like, probably not with you, but you'll hear talk about it on radio and television, and the media will have this story all wrong because what they're going to focus on is Steve Bannon and racism. They want to focus, and Charlie Rose did this, they wanted to focus on immigration and racism and everything else. I want you to listen to what he said here because the media won't, and somebody needs to point this out. Listen.
There's no path to citizenship, no path to a green card, and no amnesty. Okay. Amnesty is non-negotiable.
America was, in the eyes of so many people, and it's what people respect America for. It is people who've been able to come here, find a place, contribute to the economy. That's what immigration has been in America. And you seem to want to turn it around and stop it.
You could be more dead wrong. America was built on her citizens.
We're all immigrants.
America was built
except
on her
citizens. Except the Native Americans
don't,
who are here.
Don't give me, this is the thing of the left. Right. Charlie, that's beneath you. Right. America's built on our citizens. Look at the 19th century. What built America is called the American system. From Hamilton to Polk to Henry Clay to Lincoln to the Roosevelts. A system of protection of our manufacturing, financial system that lends to manufacturers, okay, and a control of our borders. Economic nationalism is what this country was built on, the American system, right? We go back to that. We look after our own. We look after our citizens. We look after our manufacturing base. And guess what? This country is going to be greater, more united, more powerful than it's ever been.
So as I am watching this.
This is not astrophysics.
As I am watching this last night, I'm thinking to myself, is anybody noticing what he's just done? He starts out with something like amnesty is off the table. And there's a lot of conservatives, and I'm one of them. I don't agree with amnesty. However, we have to have a discussion on what do we do? What does an actual plan look like going forward? So we get stopped there, but we're not listening to what he's saying. Remember, he's talking about white supremacists, white nationalists. The Nazis are white nationalists. They're not just white supremacists. And that's where this is getting lost. You just stop at the white part.
Well, yeah, well, those guys are racist, so I don't...
Yeah, okay, well, that's a kind of a big deal. But that's not all the Nazis are. They're white nationalists. So Donald Trump or Bannon or whoever, I don't know, he may be racist, he may not be racist. I don't think the president is a racist. I've heard that when you speculate on the president and if he's a racist or not, you get into trouble. Well, that was the last one. Everybody can speculate on this one. I do know this, that the president and Steve Bannon do believe in economic nationalism. What is that? It's strange because I've never heard from conservatives say, you know, Alexander Hamilton and Polk. Oh, Polk was great. Who's the Polk talk I've missed? And then to hear Polk, Clay, Hamilton, FDR, Lincoln. Okay, wait a minute. Hang on just a second. You'll notice he called it the American system. The American system is Henry Clay's system. Now, this is what he said built America. The American system is three parts. One, a tariff on other countries to protect all American industry. Two, a national federal reserve bank. A national bank. Three, federal subsidies for roads, canals, infrastructure. And by the way, Hamilton added one extra, and that was public schools. An American federal public school. So if you are sitting here listening to him, I want you to know what he is fighting for and what the president, he says, at least he says, the president is fighting for is tariffs, a central bank, infrastructure bailouts, and federalized schools. That is the American system that he just quoted. You know who's for that? Socialists. In particular, national socialists. And the third thing to add to that would be supremacists. White, black, doesn't matter. People who believe that they are better than everyone else and they can form a nationalized system that will control everything, it usually ends up being, well, we've got to get rid of some of these inferior people. That is what Bannon is pushing for. That is what nationalism and the American system actually means. Do you know what the average property loss from just one home break-in is? According to the FBI, it's $2,316. One burglary over $2,000. It is as important as ever to protect your home and try now with Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe is going to protect every door, every window in your home. You have motion sensors and entry sensors. The system is completely wireless. You can set it up yourself. There's no drilling holes in your walls, no running wires. There's none of that stuff. You open up the box and you plug the base station in, and it tells you what to do. You have a professional monitoring team that is watching your house around the clock, ready to send police, and that is $14.99 a month, $15. And with SimpliSafe, you can be sure that your home and your things are protected. Go to SimpliSafeBeck.com. Get a special 10% discount when you order today. If you want the security system right away, visit your local Best Buy, and you'll have your home protected tonight. It's SimpliSafeBeck.com. If you want to avoid the store, SimpliSafeBeck.com. Get a 10% discount. SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck.
It's really interesting, this economic nationalism that Steve Bannon was talking about on 60 Minutes. And I want you to understand that white nationalism, the racist part, is only half of it. That's only half. The reason why the Nazis are so spooky is they have the ability, through a nationalized government, a very strong centralized government, to kill everybody they disagree with. That's the problem. You know, Bill the Nazi down the street is a problem. I don't like Bill the Nazi. I don't know Bill the Nazi, and I want my kids staying away from Bill the Nazi. But Bill the Nazi's not rounding people up because he doesn't have the government to do it.
You need that infrastructure to be able to accomplish those tasks. That's correct. Why we argue for small government all
yes.
the time.
Yes. So you can say, well, I disagree with all that, racist part. But if you're not paying attention to the nationalist part, that's a problem. That's a real problem.
It creates the conditions that terrible things like that, like the Holocaust, are possible. Right now, obviously, we're not talking about the exact same system here, but it's that strain of nationalism that led in Germany and many other places.
With the Nazis here in America, you are talking about exactly the same strain. You're not talking about it with Bannon per se.
No,
I don't know if I don't want to say that Bannon is a racist, or a white supremacist at all. I don't think he is, but he is playing footsies with those people and only condemning half of the ideology. And the scary part of the ideology is having the conditions to where you can force that ideology on others. And that's the nationalist part.
One of the things Bannon did before he came into the political eye was he worked for a company that I think it was World of Warcraft, the video game. And in there you mine for like fake video game gold. And he started working for a company that hired farms of people to mine the fake video game gold and sell the gold, the fake gold, to people for real money that played the game. So they would have people go in by the thousands and play the game to get these credits, right? And sell the credits to people who liked playing the game but didn't want to work so hard for the credits, and they'd pay money for them. Then the business was a complete disaster, as many of his have been, and it fell apart catastrophe sort of situation. However, the interesting part about it was that is where he sort of found the fuel, because that gaming community was so insular and so passionate that he found that it would, those sort of quirky, weird movements could provide a lot of fuel for a much larger movement. And that's where it's believed he got the idea to bring in the movements like the alt-right and take the energy that they had through these really passionate niche sort of beliefs to drive a candidate if he could convince them this candidate was friendly to them.
See, here's the problem with this is the average person is being driven right into the arms of these spooky people, quite honestly, driven right into them. And I don't think most people understand how that is happening. Can we play cut three? Mike Lee. Mike Lee is fighting for religious freedom, and is the reason why this is happening is because there's something we're going to address next hour that happened on Capitol Hill, where senators were questioning a person's Catholicism and saying, "I'm not sure if you're qualified to be able to serve in the federal government because you are a a Catholic. It was crazy. Now listen to what the warning is here from Mike Lee.
Another one of my colleagues even went so far as to ask Professor Barrett to confess her faith under oath in the committee. What's an Orthodox Catholic? This committee member asked. Do you consider yourself an Orthodox Catholic? If these remarks had been some sort of bizarre, one-time aberration, I probably would have passed them over in silence. But I feel compelled to speak out because I wonder whether a pattern might be emerging, a pattern of a hostility toward people of faith who come before this body. Just a few months ago, another eminently qualified nominee, Russell Vogt, appeared before the Budget Committee to be considered for a post at the Office of Management and Budget. One of my Senate colleagues used his time to question this nominee, not about management or about budgets, but about the nominee's evangelical Christian beliefs. Quote, in your judgment, asked this senator, do you think that people who are not Christians are going to be condemned? Now, Mr. Vogt explained to the committee that he is an evangelical Christian and that he adheres to the beliefs espoused by evangelical Christians. But that apparently wasn't good enough for the questioner, who later stated that he would vote against Mr. Vogt's nomination because he was not, and I quote, what this country is supposed to be about. This is disturbing. This is not what this country is supposed to be about. Some sort of inquiry into one's religious beliefs as a condition precedent for holding public office in the United States government. These strange questions have nothing to do with the nominee's competence or patriotism or ability to serve among and for Americans of different faiths equally. In fact, they have little to do with this life at all. Instead, they have to do with the afterlife, what comes after we die in this life. To my knowledge, the OMB and the Seventh Circuit have no jurisdiction over that. This country is divided enough. Millions of Americans feel that Washington, D.C., and the dominant culture despise them. And how could they not when they see their leaders sitting here grilling patriotic citizens about their faith? Like inquisitors, how could they not feel like their values are not welcome in this chamber, within this government? Religious freedom is of deep concern to me as a Mormon.
Did you hear what he just said? That people feel that their leaders despise them. This is a very dangerous seed to plant. And quite honestly, both parties, and not just on religious terms, you know, and I know, Mitch McConnell, he doesn't like you. Those are the people who are the upper ends of the party. They don't like you. They're embarrassed by you. That is a dangerous seed to plant. And they've been planting those seeds in Washington for a while. And that's what gives people like Bannon and white nationalists, black nationalists, Antifa, it gives them the opportunity to grow because you need a protector. We need to change that culture.
Glenn. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Time for an adult conversation. Time to get away from the 144 characters for just a second, and actually have a conversation with some nuance. We have Liz Wolf joining us. She is the managing editor of Young Voices. She wrote an article in Playboy, or had an article in Playboy, about the problem with categorizing white nationalists as terrorists. So, Liz, welcome, Liz. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
Good. Let's just start on a couple of things. First of all, you a white supremacist? Are you a white supremacist?
I am definitely not. Okay, <all right.
laughs> You hesitated too long. Yeah.
Are you a nationalist?
That's sort of hard to define. I don't think so, as a libertarian.
Right. Okay. So a nationalist, mm-hmm. as we were just talking about with Steve Bannon last night, mm-hmm. on 60 Minutes, he talked about the American system, and he specifically mentioned Henry Clay, and he said the American system is what made America great. I think it's the exact opposite, but here's what the Henry Clay system was: a tariff to protect and promote American industry, a national centralized bank, and federal subsidies for roads, canals, and other internal improvements, plus an American school, so basically a federalized public school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any real conservative or small government libertarian that mm-hmm. is for any of those things.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree.
So you in your article, you write about you have to fight white nationalism, but be careful not to designate them as terrorists. Why?
Well, because whenever you expand government power and whenever you sort of mince words, especially with political groups, I think it's really challenging because essentially you could make it so that you give the Trump administration the power to go after white nationalist groups, which the question of whether or not they'll actually do that is a whole other thing. But then that power can just as easily be used to target left-leaning groups. It could just as easily be used to target Second Amendment groups. When you expand that government power and allow them to classify all sorts of domestic and somewhat political groups as terrorists, really, really bad things can happen.
It's amazing to me that people don't get this with what's happening with DACA right now. I mean, mm-hmm. the government said, hey, give us your information. So people did. Now, what's going to happen to all of that information? Now you've self-identified. And if Trump wanted to use that information, he could. If it's not him, somebody else will have that information. You don't like to expand the government and give it more information and more power because you don't know who's going to be next.
Well, exactly. And I think a lot of people in my generation sort of haven't done a good job of understanding that for every Obama administration where you give them expanded power, then there's the other side in charge. Or, you know, if you particularly like George W. Bush, at the end of that administration, the Obama administration comes into power. And it's worth thinking, what are the long-term consequences of these expansions of power? I think they tend to be really bad.
So how do we, I don't understand how your generation, who, unlike a lot of people my age, don't have faith in the next generation. I have tremendous faith in this next generation. And partly because we have to. I mean, you're the ones who are going to have to, you're going to fix it. You're going to fix it or you're...
Great statement of confidence there. Yeah, we believe in you because we have no other freaking choice.
Well, no, but that is part of it. I mean, just like my parents had to have faith in me, you have to have faith in the next generation. But I also see that you instinctively get it. You, for instance, I can't convince people at all that the world is going to change and really you need to rethink your business entirely. Today I come in and there's a story about Nordstrom's, how they're getting rid of all of the clothing in Nordstrom's. Well, what's left? And it's because, as Nordstrom says, the store is changing. The experience is different. You guys see a different world where you're able to do whatever you want, create whatever you want. You don't need these big systems and big companies and everything else. How is it you miss the connection in your generation between that freedom and big government?
I'm really hopeful that it's something that we'll learn over time and learn through trial and error, right? The more we make these mistakes, the more we'll suffer the consequences and realize there's a problem when you expand, you know, the federal government's power. I think that is really interesting what you're talking about how millennials are comfortable with various industries being disrupted by new technology, by change, by evolution. But then they very much don't see that connection between should you then give some of that power back to the government. And I'm hopeful that as they see the negative results that come from that, they'll realize, you know, as they get older and older, wait a second, that's not the world we want.
What are you seeing on the horizon with people your age? And tell me about your organization.
So my organization is... an organization that works with a whole bunch of young writers, and they're typically politically independent. Some of them are more conservative. Some of them are more libertarian. And we're really trying to get those messages of limited government, of increased freedom, of personal responsibility out there. And so we work with a whole bunch of outlets. We, you know, have people published in Daily Beast. We have people published in Playboy. We have people in Washington Examiner, the American Conservative. The whole concept is that there's no limit to the number of people and organizations that can hear this pro-freedom message. So I'm an editor, and I work to, you know, get their work, you know, in tip-top shape and publish to some of those places.
And what are you seeing as the, if things would melt down, and I mean, we're already starting to see colleges just, it's a nightmare. What has happened in the cost of college in the last 10 years alone, the debt that is coming, and everybody's being strapped to this. When the government is standing there and somebody like Bernie Sanders says, I'll take care of you. Or on the other side, somebody like, you know, a Steve Bannon says, I'll take care of you. What's to stop your generation from saying, thank God somebody's going to step in?
I don't think there's much right now. I think you see people in my generation being obsessed with Bernie Sanders or not understanding that there is, you know, there are always long-term consequences and unintended consequences to every decision that you make, whether it's on a personal level or on a government level, right? And I think, you know, once people in my generation become taxpayers and realize, okay, we're, you know, investing in college, we're ramping up the price of college, and we're having to foot the bill for that, I think they'll sort of begin to realize that maybe it's not the best investment, maybe it's not the future they want. And I think they'll begin to sort of pursue a middle ground, hopefully.
I like to be the person who's always negative on the program, so let me take the opposite side here. Because this is an imperfect sort of comparison, but it reminds me, as you know, September 11th is today. After that, there were a bunch of, you know, musical acts that came out and actors that came out and said things that conservatives in particular were like, shut up, just do your job, sing your songs, do your acting, stop talking about politics. And I felt that way too, I remember at the time. And then you got later on, and then some conservative celebrities started coming out and they started saying things, and it felt awesome. Yes, you do it. Go for it. And all the way to the point at the end where you've got Kid Rock potentially running for Senate. Donald Trump is the president of the United States. Conservatives apparently really do like when celebrities say things that they agree with. And it's interesting because I think, like, with the government, it's the same way. It feels too good when you're in power to utilize the power. And so all the conservatives now are wanting to execute the same things that we complained about liberals doing years ago when Obama was in power. And I don't know that there's enough people who can resist that temptation when it's put in front of them. Do you have any hope on that front?
Not as much as I would like. I mean, just to be frank with
side.
Y'all.
She's on my side.
No,
I'm trying to find some good, can we find something positive here?
Well, I think there's this issue of we see growing tribalism, right? You know, when people on your side do it, you're like, yeah, we're the winning team.
Yeah.
When people on the other side do it, you're like, I mean, think about the number of people that hate Lena Dunham nowadays. Do they, I asked somebody, he was, you know, riding on Lena Dunham the other day, and I was like, why do you dislike her? And he was like, I don't know, like, she's a liberal. She was campaigning for Hillary and she lives in Brooklyn.
Right.
And I was like, well, that alone isn't necessarily bad enough to hate somebody. Like, I can think of all sorts of other reasons, but, like, that alone is not good enough.
Her show is a good reason, for example.
I mean, why
especially
for
the later seasons.
Why just hate people? Well, racism is so stupid. Get to know people. Know why you despise them for specific reasons.
Like, you can definitely find reasons. Like, it's
right.
Super easy once you know somebody.
Once you get to know me, I can give you 100 reasons. Why stop at the surface? So what is the libertarian message that is sexy? I mean, what is the thing that will sell when you've got all kinds of problems? What's the thing that's going to make people, the millennials, say, yeah, that's me, I'm in?
Well, so far we haven't found it. Marijuana legalization didn't seem to work. I think, in general, focusing on how expanded power can hurt people on both sides. It's not just going to come back and hurt the neo-Nazis, you know, the ones that are really easy to identify as the bad guys. I mean, we've seen the FBI target the Black Panthers in the past. We've seen them target anti-war activists. We've seen them target animal rights activists, for crying out loud. And so appealing to people and letting them know, you know, when you expand government power, it can be used to target the obvious bad guys. It can also be used to target lots of other groups that, I mean, especially left-leaning millennials would find those groups very sympathetic, right? And so it's important to sort of drive that point home that...
Where is the line? Where is the line? Because, you know, you mentioned the Black Panthers mm-hmm. or animal activist groups. I can't remember. You might remember, Stu. About 10 years ago, there was this really nasty, virulent animal activist group mm-hmm. that was engaged in terror.
Named after mm-hmm. a wonderful alien from 80s sitcoms, Alf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Alf. So where is the line? Where's the line of saying, you know, this group, we do need to...
Well, I don't know, but I think that's the precise reason why up until now we've been so hesitant to yes. label domestic terrorist groups as terrorist groups. We're comfortable labeling international terrorist groups as that because we have a more clearly defined set of criteria. With domestic groups, it's really, really difficult to draw that line. It's difficult. One person's, you know, Black Panther terrorist group could be another person's, you know, political group. One person could see the NRA as terrorists for some reason, whereas others see them as exercising their Second Amendment rights that, you know, they're given in the Constitution. And I think that's precisely the issue, that it's so hard to draw that line. And so I err on the side of not letting anybody in any position of power draw that line, at least right now, especially when it's so politically motivated.
It's interesting to me, too, because, I mean, these are big issues. The article you wrote about white supremacy, I mean, it's hard to come up with a bigger one than that. But even with just like basic economic foundations, when we talked about, growing up with, before the internet, right? There was a lot of things to believe that conservatism would be good for the economy, a lot of things to believe that economic freedom is a moral principled stand. But it's so much easier now to understand yeah. it with the internet, with Uber, with all of these services that are outside of any structure that develop on their own and are all the things that millennials like the best.
Yes.
And how yet are you? They're like, oh, we need more government control. I do not understand it. I can't get past it.
Yeah, I mean, my home city of Austin, they were, you know, regulating Uber and Lyft and making it horribly hard for them to operate there. And it's like, well, wait a second. Millennials claim to like that. It makes people safer. It means after a night out of drinking, they're able to have a safe, fast, cheap ride home. What's not to like there? Mm. But it's amazing. They still, you know, feel like we should call for increased regulation in all these areas. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Thank you so much, Liz. That is Liz Wolf.
She's the managing editor of Young Voices. Also, her story is in Playboy, which you can actually read for the articles in this particular instance. We will... I don't know if we should... Do we tweet links to Playboy, Glenn? Is that okay? It's your company. I don't know.
Were you nude in the
no.
Playboy? I think
fully clothed.
Okay. Yeah, I think... What'd you say? Lots of research.
Lots of research.
Lots of research.
Okay,
thank you. Okay. Do you remember the feeling that you had last time you surprised somebody in your life? Pro Flowers would like to help you surprise somebody for no reason at all while surprising you with a special deal. It is 20% off any of their unique summer rose bouquets or any other bouquet of $29 or more. They have the rainbow roses, which are a hit if you're not sure what to send somebody. Pro Flower also is the home of the bouquets that have the guaranteed freshness for at least 7 days or your money back, and you control the delivery date. Get 20% off the summer roses or any other bouquet that is $29 or more. Just go to proflowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. That's proflowers.com. Promo code Glenn. Don't wait. Make somebody's day for no reason at all today. Proflowers.com. We continue this conversation tomorrow because the decisions are becoming more and more tough. What happens when somebody wants to silence somebody on the internet?
I found the Daily Stormer repugnant. I am not shedding a tear that content isn't online anymore. But one of my fellow employees came up to me the day that we took it offline and said, hey, is this the day the internet dies?
There was no due process. You woke up one morning and you said, this is bad and I'm going to do something about it.
This was an amazing interview from Vice. We go into that tomorrow, the day the internet died. Also, Mark Levin. I don't know if you heard the latest from Mark Levin, but he's been raging.
He said just a few weeks ago, if we don't get a wall on the southern border, he's shutting down the government. Well, the Republican Congress didn't flip-flop on that. He flip-flopped on that. by cutting his deal with Schumer and Pelosi, who are thrilled. In fact, Trump is thrilled. He calls them back after he watches the lib media, after he watches some of his buddies on Fox. He calls them back. He's ecstatic. He says, look at all the great press we're getting. Look at all the great press we're getting. Some people out there saying, he saved the Constitution. He's a real constitutionalist here in what he's done. He sold us out on DACA. He sold us out on this deal with Schumer, this continuing resolution, because it doesn't include the wall. And he allowed them to attach the Harvey funding to it. It should have been separate. That funding should have been immediate, in my humble opinion, with no strings attached, no lard, no pork.
Mark Levin at his best. Also, one more thing. For Mercury One, we have our six core disaster partners have staged and are now moving into the path of Hurricane Irma. We are still very active here in Texas and now also in Florida. And we sure could use your help. If you would like to donate, please go to mercuryone.org. Every penny that is raised for disaster relief goes to these organizations, and we spell them out exactly where they go. MercuryOne.org.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth.
The Constitution will save us all because dogma lives loudly within you. Dogma lives loudly within you. That's what Senator Dianne Feinstein told a nominee for the judgeship on the Seventh Circuit. Amy Barrett is a Notre Dame law professor, mother of seven. And God forbid she's also a Catholic. Her Catholicism came up a number of times during her hearing last week, but none of it was as disturbing as Feinstein's line of questioning.
Why is it that so many of us on this side have this very uncomfortable feeling that, you know, dogma and law are two different things? And I think whatever a religion is, it has its own dogma. The law is totally different. And I think in your case, Professor, when you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. Mm. And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years. Wow. In this country.
The dogma lives loudly within you. Well, it lived loudly with all of our founders. It lived loudly in Abraham Lincoln. The question is today, can you be a person of faith and serve your nation? Can you serve on one of the nation's highest courts? Can you serve at all? Can you be both a constitutionally illiterate person and serve in the United States Senate? Apparently the answer there is yes. These lines of questioning, they're not new. The truth is they say more about the dogmatic views of the senators that ask them. But make no mistake, there's no difference between this question and have you ever been or are you now a member of the Communist Party? You see, Amy Barrett's real sin here is not her Catholic faith. It's that her personal view disagrees with the senator's dogma. Her personal view, specifically abortion. The danger here is the increasingly hostile attitude toward faith. Or if I can, let's call a spade a spade. Religious bigotry. Unfortunately, that is the dogma that seems to live in the hearts of far too many in Washington.
Monday, September 11th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Now think about 16 years ago, September 11th, 2001. Think about how everyone came out on the front steps. Jesse Jackson, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, and all of the conservative Republicans, the Trent Lotts of the world. Think about how they all stood arm in arm and they sang the national anthem. And here we are today with Time magazine placing on its cover Colin Kaepernick. The debate about privilege, pride, and patriotism. The perilous fight is what it is. That's what the title is on Time magazine. The perilous fight. The perilous fight? This is a heroic gesture to take a knee during the national anthem? This is heroic now. They said he has spawned a national debate and protests. From the rest of the NFL to high schools and colleges across the country. This is an amazing stat. 44% of NFL fans, 44%, now say they're willing to give up watching the league if the protests continue. How real is that?
I'm a skeptic on these things, as you may know. It's amazing to see that that stuff continues to go on. I don't know that I buy any of it. I saw Stephen A. Smith, who I generally like Stephen A. Smith, but he tweeted something to the effect of like, you know, the Colts quarterback this weekend was terrible, Scott Tolzien, and they had to pull him out of the game after a first half. And he said, this is why people are fired up about the Kaepernick thing. They think he should have a job, and it's because of these protests and everything else, and it's because he's black, I guess, is the insinuation there. Of course, he was replaced by a black quarterback that the Colts traded for. They could have had Kaepernick for free, and they traded for a different black quarterback. So I don't know how much of it is this about race and how much of it is about Colin Kaepernick being terrible.
Kaepernick was voted by the fans as the most hated player in the NFL. One general manager of the NFL said 70% of the NFL teams, quote, genuinely hate him, end quote. He is also near the bottom of the ESPN total quarterback ratings, rankings. So how is this guy getting away with, we should hire him? That's because the protests are all about that now. Somebody needs to hire him. He sucks.
He sucks.
And nobody likes him.
Right. I mean, Malcolm Jenkins is another player who's doing the same thing as Colin Kaepernick. He's on the Eagles. He's a safety on the Eagles. He's one of the best safeties in the league. No problem keeping his job. You know why? I mean, he's sitting for and putting his fist up for national anthems, and he agrees completely with Kaepernick. He's on that side of the argument, yet has no turbulence whatsoever. It's because he's good. And that's what people care about. He's good. Now, you can make the argument that Kaepernick should appear on a roster somewhere as a third stringer or something, and maybe he would without this. But it's hard to want to bring in this sort of controversy when the guy should barely be on an NFL roster. And that's the problem he's facing. He's just not good enough.
Where does this guy go from here? Where does Kaepernick go from here? What, seriously.
Cuba?
Right. I mean, what is he? He is just going to be, I mean, he's just an angry guy. And if he doesn't get his way, there will be people who just fuel that anger. I mean, he's not going to go away. What happens? What is the future of Colin Kaepernick? And what is, quite honestly, what's the future of the NFL? Kansas City Chiefs, New England Patriots.
Oh, I loved it.
Well, you were one of the few. 13% decline in viewership from the last year's opening game. 13% decline. Anything to do with Colin Kaepernick and all of this?
I think it might have something to do with it. I think people tend to overinflate how much it has to do with it, in my opinion. You know, it could be there's a lot of other things going on here. But I do think it's probably some percentage of it. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of news stories. We've got almost been in a nuclear war. We've got massive hurricanes wiping out half of the country. There have been other things on the plate, and maybe that was part of the reason for it. I mean, if you're in Florida, were you that interested in a game? I mean, their games got canceled this weekend. Their NFL games, the Dolphins games, and the Bucks happened to play the Dolphins. But I mean, so those games were canceled. I mean, maybe you just weren't in NFL mode when you take out two states or big chunks of two massive media
markets.
This
is Thursday, though.
I know, but still, you're getting prepared for the hurricane, right? I mean, you may not be as into it as normal. And a 13% drop-off from, let's be honest, unbelievable numbers. These numbers still, they're still the top show on all of television. Sunday Night Football rules television every year.
Yes and no. I read yesterday, and you're an expert in this, I am not. But I read yesterday that they actually were down last year, that the ratings are going down.
And down from what, I think, is more of the question. Down from unbelievable to unbelievable, right? Like, they are outperforming everybody else. And remember, all other shows are also dropping off. Look at what's happening to cable news. Look at what's happening to,
I think cable
to,
news,
to scripted television.
Yeah, but I think cable news is different. I think cable news is doing it because and perhaps it's not. I think cable news is doing it to itself. I really think that cable news, the problem with cable news is I don't want to watch it anymore. Do you?
I don't know.
Yeah,
most of the time.
I don't know anybody who does unless, like, I watched it this weekend. I want to know what's going on with the hurricane.
Right.
And I want to know about world events, et cetera, et cetera. But I do not. I don't care about any of this political crap anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, I care about it. I'll read it. But I don't want to hear it anymore.
And it's more of a, you're talking about a very specific thing that occurs on cable news.
Yes.
Right? What, this two boxes, two activists screaming at each other.
I don't care.
Bored to death with
bored
that.
Bored to death.
And that's understandable. There's a lot of other things that go on cable news that you know, that are
news.
That are news.
News.
Yeah, commentary and analysis and perspective. I think those things are important. And you get that sometimes. But it's too rare. It's the easiest thing in the world to throw on two people that hate each other and have them scream their insults and then they go out for beers afterwards.
Yeah, and here's the problem. You know, with Colin Kaepernick, dude, you realize that read the fifth stanza of the Star Spangled Banner. It's all about the abolition of slavery. All of it. Fifth stanza. Read it. Look it up. That's what it's about. Freeing men. In chains, slaves. That's what it's about. It's about the idea of America. And, you know, you sit there and you're looking at these guys who are making millions of dollars in an American system. And it is the system of stability that is allowing them to make this kind of money. If the government is unstable, if society, culture goes unstable, nobody's going to be making money. Certainly nobody's going to be paying you millions of dollars to go catch a football. And it drives me nuts. And I guess it's because we've been so involved lately with, you know, the hurricanes. And before that, with the trying to free the slaves from the sex slave industry, and now actual slaves trying to save the lives of people in the Middle East, worried about our own children and what they're facing, and how are we going to get them a basic education? Let me give you some stats on education. On education. In 2004, the debt for college students was $260 billion. So if you went to college, you had a debt, all of the debt for student loans, $260 billion in 2004. Do you know what that is today? $1.4 trillion. The cost of education is going up 41% per year. There are now 1,800 college majors. You wouldn't believe the college majors that you can get now. You can get a college major on Star Wars. You can get a college major on just about anything.
I think I have an honorary degree already.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And you've gone into debt for that? And out of those college majors, only one out of four get a job in their field. You know what this is hurting? This is hurting housing. It is hurting marriage. It is hurting entrepreneurship. The idea that I can get married, have a family, buy a house, start my own business. When you're this much in debt, you're not thinking about buying a house. You got to get out of debt. You're not thinking about getting married because you're not financially responsible enough to have kids. Start your own business? I have too much debt already. This is systematically taking us apart. And what are we doing? We're arguing over the Star Spangled Banner, which the fifth verse is all about stopping slavery? Really? That is how sweet your life is? Colin, man, I think there's a lot of people all around the world that would love to have the sweet-ass gig that you have.
Had.
The sweet retirement plan that you're under. They'd love to have a fraction of that.
They'd love to have the opportunity to lose their job to Blaine Gabbert, too. They would think that was wonderful. And, you know, that's what happened before he was a protester, before he was Mr. Anti-Police, before he was wearing pig socks. He lost his job to a guy commonly referred to as a complete disaster at quarterback. He lost his job to Blaine Gabbert. And, you know, all these people that want to tell you he should be on a roster might want to remember that.
It's the dead of night. You wake up kind of in a fog. Is that, what did I just hear? Is that glass shattering? Somebody in the house? You reach over, you unlock your nightstand safe. Your hand closes in around the handgun. It's a weight that your hand is familiar with. It's been there before. Hopefully at this point, your basic training kicks in because the next few minutes are going to be a blur. You now have to go and protect your family from an intruder who you don't know why he's in the house, intended to cause harm, worse, steal stuff, food. What is it? Your family is shaken after you have had to pull the trigger. Maybe he's dead, maybe he's alive, but police are on the way. And if you've discharged your firearm, yeah, they're not going to hail you as a hero. Your kids will see daddy arrested and questioned. Keeping your family safe doesn't stop when the smoke clears. The bad guy is replaced by a guy with a briefcase and a suit that doesn't want you to be able to protect your family with a gun. Knowing exactly what you should and shouldn't say, once the police arrive, knowing what your rights are, knowing what you're doing, planning for the moment after could mean the difference between freedom and a jail cell. If you want to protect your family and live by the Constitution, go to protectanddefend.com right now. Claim your free copy of the USCCA's free guide that will uncover the six things you didn't know that will happen when the police arrive. That's protectanddefend.com now. You carry a gun? Protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck.
If you'd like to help out with hurricane relief for either Harvey or Irma, We invite you to participate at mercuryone.org, mercuryone.org, and just donate there. We have our partners on the ground for Irma and for Harvey, and it's bad, but we sure appreciate all of your help, all of the information that you need on where the money goes, how the money is spent. I just tell you that every dollar that is earmarked for the hurricanes goes right to the hurricane. There's not a dime that goes anywhere else.
We skim very little off the top.
No, in fact,
just a little.
There's none.
Well, there's parties and events that need to happen, you know.
Really?
We are in Texas, which is one of the hurricane-affected states. So.
Right.
So, no, actually, luckily, yeah. I have nothing to do with it, so it does all go to the hurricane.
Mercuryone.org/hurricane relief and get involved. Also, there's something else called justserve.org. Not affiliated with me, but I know a lot of people that are using justserve.org. You can go there, and that is those are people on the ground who are saying, hey, our church is doing X, Y, and Z, or our organization, and we really need help in this area. So you can actually go and find the people on the ground that are actually looking and needing help on the ground. Justserve.org or mercuryone.org/hurricane.
A couple of other things with it being the 9/11 anniversary. Yeah. First of all, if you're on Twitter, follow Ari Fleischer today. He was, of course, in the Bush administration at the time, and he does a minute-by-minute recap of that day of 9/11/2001 as it happened, and he posts the things as it goes. It's an amazing thing to read during the day because you just forget so many details about what they were thinking and what you were thinking at that time. The other thing I always recommend, and it's a tradition, I think, on the show, this is the one day I always recommend you should watch MSNBC. Because this is the day.
Except they're not doing it this year.
Yeah, this is the day they play the Today Show coverage from 9/11 straight. No commercials, nothing. They're not doing it this way. They are moving away from that coverage, which is, that's sad.
Glenn Beck.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat Gray, Unleashed, begins his own radio broadcast, radio and television, on the Blaze TV. And that begins today.
He's back, and this time, he's pissed off.
And that begins today. In about 25 minutes, you can hear it on the Blaze radio network and the Blaze TV network. Just go to theblaze.com, find out more information there. Welcome to the program, Pat.
Thank you. Good to be here. Had you guys seen the New York Times article about the new kind of civil war that's coming?
New kind.
A new kind of civil war.
Okay.
We're tired of the old way. We want to do something new. Okay.
Yeah.
There's ways to kill people.
I don't want to go out on the battlefield dressed in those wool clothing.
It's too hot in Texas for the wool clothing.
Way too hot.
And nobody's willing to do that anymore unless it's air conditioned.
Right.
So we had to find a new way, and apparently we have.
Okay.
The article says, a day after the brawling and racist brutality and deaths in Virginia, which I only remember one death. That didn't seem to be plural. Governor,
there were other people. You're saying that's the only death that happened there?
Violently, yes.
Well, in Virginia?
In Virginia, that day, by the people that they're talking about, instance they're talking about.
A lot of disclaimers.
It sounds like an Al Gore piece, doesn't it? Governor Terry McAuliffe asked, how did we get to this place? The more relevant question, though, after Charlottesville and other deadly episodes in Ferguson, Charleston, Dallas, St. Paul, Baltimore, Baton Rouge, and Alexandria, which they're lumping even Dallas in, which was five police officers shot, was not the same thing that they're talking about in these other cities, is where is the United States headed? How fragile is the Union, our republic, and a country that has long been considered the world's most stable democracy? Okay. We're not a democracy.
I used to hate that. I used to hate people like that. I got it, Mr. Constitution in the pocket protector.
It's so important.
It is so important.
Because
democracy
is the new way to describe socialism.
Yes, it is the way to get to socialism, which eventually gets you to totalitarianism. It's Venezuela.
Exactly.
Remember, he was democratically elected. And then you fill in the blank, and it always ends the same way.
Exactly. So it continues. The dangers are now bigger than the collective episodes of violence. The radical right was more successful in entering the political mainstream last year than in half a century. The Southern Poverty Law Center reported in February. The New York Times, quoting the Southern Poverty Law Center, is like Fox News quoting the Research and Statistics Department at the KKK. We can't allow that kind of yellow journalism to just go unnoticed.
Although they'd put Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A as hate groups if they could.
And they have. Yeah. And they put David Barton.
David Barton, I believe,
as
is
a terrorist.
He's a domestic terrorist, I believe.
It's such an illegitimate source. It's such an illegitimate organization, and they keep quoting it
because they don't care. Honestly think most of the people at the New York Times don't have any idea that it's a totally bogus place.
The average person,
because all their friends are just like, yeah, the Southern Poverty Law Center. Do you even know what it is? Do you even know what money is behind it? Do you even know what they say?
I mean, they have to know, though. It's nothing but a left wing, a far left, extreme left wing organization.
I don't think they care. I don't think, even if they do, they don't think there's a problem with that.
Yeah, they certainly don't care.
Right. If you're politically engaged, I think you know it. But I mean, the thing that sucks about the Southern Poverty Law Center doing this in this crazy left wing way is that there would be real value to someone doing that work, honestly.
Yes.
Yeah. Like tracking the real crazy groups on both sides.
But they don't do that.
Yeah, they don't. Nope.
And everybody knows that they don't do that. But also, as we've talked about, these goofballs in the alt-right are not on the right. That's where the word alt, short for alternative, comes from, right? And these Nazis that are running around now all of a sudden, they're not an American right-wing organization. We don't live in Europe, so we shouldn't have to keep saying this. But the right is for small government and not for a government that can put people in concentration camps.
Here's what I want you to do.
Sarah, could you play, what is it, the Steve Bannon cut that we played earlier today?
Oh, it's cut 9, I think, Sarah.
Could you play cut 9 for me? If Steve Bannon, this is 60 minutes last night, tell me that this is what the right believes.
Yeah. There's no path to citizenship, no path to a green card, and no amnesty. Okay. Amnesty is non-negotiable.
Okay. America was, in the eyes of so many people, and it's what people respect America for. It is people who've been able to come here, find a place,
legally
contribute to the economy.
Yeah, but that's not
what
answers.
That's what immigration has been.
Because that's the answer.
Yeah. Legally, and you seem to want to turn it around and stop it.
You could be more dead wrong. America was built on her citizens.
We're all immigrants.
America was built
except
on her
citizens. Don't
give me, this is the thing of the left. Charlie, that's beneath you. America's built on our citizens. Look at the 19th century. America is called the American system. From Hamilton to Polk to Henry Clay to Lincoln to the Roosevelts.
Stop.
A system of protection.
Stop.
Okay, but this guy's he's not the beacon of conservatism.
Right, but that is what conservatives are now, because conservatives are hearing the first part.
Yeah.
And they're
agreeing with it.
Right. And this is the problem with white nationalists. The white nationalists. Yes, the white part is a scary, scary part. But the nationalist part is what gives them control to round anybody up that they want to round up. And so you know, what he's quoting here is the American system. Now, I had never heard... Have you ever heard of anybody go, oh, man, Polk, he was great.
Polk.
I mean, I'm pretty good with a president.
Other than me and Stu, nobody's ever sung the praises of James K. Polk.
Okay, I mean, I've never been around anybody who's like, oh,
and frankly,
man,
he was
Polk
terrible.
Was
we shouldn't have sung his praises.
No.
He was not a good president.
Really?
Really.
Because here's Polk, Hamilton, and Henry Clay's American system.
Okay.
One, a tariff to protect and promote American industry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Two, a national central bank.
Yeah, he was, yes.
Three, federal subsidies for roads, canals, and other infrastructure improvements.
I'm big on federal canals.
Four, an American federal school.
Yeah.
No, I don't know a conservative that is for any of those things.
Wow.
That's what he was talking about. That is, quote, he said, Polk and Hamilton and the American system. That is, look up the American system. That's the American system. So there are a lot
really
of
bad.
Conservatives that are going right along with it.
And then he went to the Roosevelts, though, and we all know the Roosevelts are progressives.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Progressives.
Yes.
Polk also not a friend to persecuted religious groups either. Just not a friend. And not a good guy. But everybody remembers him for the way he treated Mexico, which was no nonsense, and we won that war pretty decisively. He's remembered for that.
Or they remember him for nothing. Let's be honest.
I was going to say, because I don't remember him for anything.
Which is why we made fun of it and had James K. Polk Tuesdays.
Right, right.
It's true.
So anyway, this article continues. In March, Keith Mines was one of several national security experts whom Foreign Policy asked to evaluate the risks of a second civil war with percentages. Mines concluded that the United States faces a 60% chance of civil war over the next 10 to 15 years. 60% chance. Other experts' prediction ranged from 5 to 95%. The sobering consensus
was 35.
That's
just all the numbers. Wait a minute. That's just all the numbers.
Yes. No, it's not all. There's still 10 other numbers.
Nobody said it was zero. And no one said it was 100. So stop your lying, Stu. Don't spin this. Don't do what you always do.
I know.
But listen to this. Based on his experience in civil wars on three continents, Mines cited five conditions that support his prediction. And this is what I found pretty interesting, because I think we'd all kind of agree with this part. Entrenched national polarization, we obviously have that.
Yep.
With no obvious meeting place for resolution, we obviously have that. Increasingly divisive press coverage and information flow, mm-hmm. we have that. Mm-hmm. Weakened institutions, notably Congress and the judiciary,
yes,
we have
definitely.
That. A sellout or abandonment of responsibility by political leadership, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the legitimization of violence as the in way to either conduct discourse or solve disputes.
And that's really, I mean, the only exception there, really the only one we might not have. However, with Antifa, you saw the left really step up and say, you know what? Well, they're just fighting fascists.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah, you have all of them.
You do.
The last
you have
one
all of them.
Is questionable.
But then he tries to pin it on Trump. President Trump modeled violence as a way to advance politically and validated bullying during and after the campaign, he wrote.
Okay, stop just a second. I happen to agree that he did from the campaign trail say things like, take that guy outside.
Yeah, he did. He did.
He did do that.
But he says, judging from recent events, the left is now fully on board with this. I mean, he's trying to pin the left's violence on Donald Trump. And you can't do that. You can't equate that.
You can't. No. Hello? Occupy Wall Street was trying to blow up a bridge in Cincinnati.
The left has been fully on board with violence ever since, forever. In the early 1900s, it was anarchists and communists. In the 30s and 40s, it was socialists. And I don't know, do the 60s ring a bell for leftist violence? I mean, how do they pin all of this leftist garbage on Trump? The Weather Underground was willing to murder 25 million people, and he's equating that with, well, but Donald Trump said, take that guy's coat away from him.
Right.
There is a difference in scale there.
A little bit different. Yeah. A little different.
But it was really cold that day.
It was cold.
And with no coat, that would be very different.
But the point is,
been chilly.
The point from the New York Times, and it's strange because these are exactly the chalkboards that I was laying out when I was at Fox.
And they called you a kook for.
And they called me a kook. I mean, they mocked me with the doom room.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I said was coming. Now, they're just catching up and they're still playing politics. I beg you. We're going to get into this tomorrow. You can be behind the curve, or you can say, okay, what's coming next? I can show you what's coming next. I can show you where we should be headed. And it's not anywhere where everyone else is saying we should go. It's just not. But if you want to remember Katrina, you can go where the press and all the government officials and all of the politicians tell you to go. Or you cannot go there and survive. It's up to you. But the New York Times, their sentiment is correct. What they don't realize is, what have they just done? They've just poured more fuel on the fire, because people who do recognize the left's violence from over the last 100 years, they feel, oh, look at the New York Times. We see what side they're on.
And that's true. But you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You have to, I mean, some of this, and I don't know why you're, you know, throwing out bathwater, because usually you just drain it, right? You just open up the drain and it goes down the drain.
What is that, the hole in the bottom there?
Yeah, it's just, kind of a hole.
Are you talking about old bathwater?
Yes.
I keep it in jugs.
In jugs?
Yeah.
Do you reuse it?
That's how environmentally correct
you
are.
No, I don't reuse it. I'm hoping that it will ferment someday and we'll be able to make wine out of it or something. I don't know. There is one baby that's trapped in a bottle that I don't know how they got into the little teeny... But there,
it happens.
It does happen.
You throw the baby
but
out.
I never did throw that baby out with the bathwater. It's still in that jug.
I don't think it's probably doing well at this point. I'm going to say,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually would not turn out well.
Baby and jugs jokes are they don't. They never lose their hilarity.
Right.
You're right. Are we going to get some of those on Pat Gray Unleashed?
Yes. You'll have that in just a few minutes.
What hour does the baby jug joke thing happen?
That'll happen in the first hour.
Okay. Wow.
So about 12 minutes from now.
Well, you don't want to miss that.
Don't want to miss it.
Only on the Blaze TV and radio, Pat Gray Unleashed. Here's a fact you should know. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate to the site within day one. That is what makes ZipRecruiter different. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with a single click. Then their powerful technology goes out and matches the right people to your job. ZipRecruiter isn't a job site. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates going to their site to find you. It goes out to all of the job sites, and it finds the candidates. There's no juggling emails, no calls to your office. You just screen, rate, and manage all of the candidates in one place. That's ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. And right now, you can post your job for free at ZipRecruiter.com. Free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. You want to hire somebody, you need somebody really good, and you need them, yesterday? ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Try it for free now. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck.
Brian Birdwell. He's a Texas senator. He is absolutely incredible. He was literally 20 yards from Flight 77 as it crashed into the Pentagon. He's covered in burns, 60% of his body. He's had 39 surgeries in the past. It's one of the most remarkable stories you've ever, ever heard. Today, Mercury One is doing a fundraiser dinner at the Capitol, and David Barton is there, and they're doing a Capitol tour, and David is where they're going to film this, and then it'll be up on the Mercury One Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Mercury One Charity, and you'll be able to see that Capitol tour. But tonight, I think it's at 6 o'clock Central, 7 p.m. Eastern. Mercury One is going to be covering something on their Facebook page, a presentation with Senator Birdwell. And he'll tell the story, and I'm telling you, you've never heard anything like it. You can check that out. We'll try to link to that from my Facebook page or glenbeck.com as well.
We should just give the little caveat that the Earth may not exist because of the solar flare by then. So if that's true, the broadcast will be canceled.
Okay.
And we'll have to reschedule that.
So let me just get this straight. Is the solar flare supposed to hit today? Is that today? Or I'm not sure when that solar flare is supposed to actually hit us.
It has just released a massive solar flare.
Yeah.
Largest since 2006.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, because they always say that's like an EMP. Do we have to come in tomorrow if no electronics work? We could stay home,
we're just
right?
Yell loudly?
I think we just stay home.
Yeah, I think that's probably.
At the point now that we're at... You know, you kind of read stuff and you're like, giant solar flare could knock all the electronics on Earth out. Huh. Well, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, that's about the reaction.
See you tomorrow.